Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hour number two, Mike Vrabel is already at the podium talking to the media. Let's hear what he has to say.
Call time, Jim, as a player and as a coach. You know, when you're a player, you put a lot of time and you're competing with guys in there and you're in the locker room with them, and we spend a lot of time together. You know, as coaches, you put a lot into each and every player to try to improve them. And then, obviously, we have to make decisions that are always difficult. Try to be honest with the players and never close doors. And a lot of those players we've been able to bring back in the past. And whether they're on our practice squad right now or will be or maybe in the future, sometimes those guys end up playing for us in the regular season or even the playoffs.
And did Logan raise his level of play once Trevor got here? Or was it just his consistency all the way through that kind of gave him the number two job?
I thought he continued to improve and work on some of the things that we had talked about and, you know, continue to get better. And again, we'll continue to evaluate that position and every other position.
Gentry.
Yeah. Hey, Mike, you know, looking back at what Ryan was able to do last year, you know, coming in, how much of an advantage do you think it's going to be for him to have now that you're under his belt with Arthur? And, you know, is there anything you can kind of pinpoint as to why he was so successful in a situation that would have been pretty challenging for a lot of guys coming in fresh like that?
Yeah, I think it's about being a professional. It's about taking advantage of your opportunities, but being prepared for when that may come, continuing to improve, understand our system, letting it work for him, being accurate, being decisive with the football. You know, so hopefully, you know, as we move on here to this season, which is the most important one, that some of those same things will continue to show up and will even be better.
Buck?
Hey, Coach. Looking ahead to Monday night, obviously, Denver looks like they may not have Von Miller for the foreseeable future with that unfortunate injury that he experienced. What do they lose in a player like Vaughn?
Well, I mean, you're looking at a Hall of Fame caliber player who's played at a high level since he's entered into this league, very instinctive, very explosive. You know, it's tough to get plays on him, and it's tough to, you know, he's instinctive and he's, you know, can still rush the passer, can still disrupt the game. Unfortunate, you know, that, you know, he's been such a good person, good player, and, you know, for this league for such a long time. So, you know, they played with some of the guys that are going to probably step in there for him now. They played against us last year, and again, we still are waiting to score a point. So we'll see how that goes.
Luke?
Mike, some players have talked about every time you enter the season, the first goal you talk about is winning the division. And I'm just curious, in your experience as a player, what is the advantage of being able to host playoff games when you think about that looking to this season?
I think that the message now is about preparing to win one game, Luke, is not about, you know, certainly we have goals that we want to win the division. But the mindset today and what it'll be tomorrow and up until Monday is our preparation to win one game and focus on that and focus on, you know, the challenge of going out to Denver, you know, to being prepared to facing a new offensive coordinator with talented skill players and a quarterback that's 4-1 as a starter and a defense that's sound and very good and number one in the red zone.
What kind of challenges does Courtland Sutton give a secondary?
Well, he's got size, he's speed. I think that the relationship with the quarterback continued to develop. So I had a few games in there when Drew played, where where he was targeted, you know, probably 10 or 11 times in a few games. So that's a guy that's, you know, growing to be his go-to guy. But obviously they have other weapons, but he's got size, got, you know, skill, and his route craft is, you know, continuing to improve.
Paul?
Hey, Mike. Wondering in big picture terms, especially in the off season, if you look at some of the things you did last year that you were so, so good at and expect regression towards the mean, at least, are there some things that you account for in that way and have to expect, no matter how good you are at them this year, that you might not be as good as you were last year?
Well, I mean, the expectations are always high. You know, obviously we were very good in the red zone last year, and that'll always be the goal, is to score touchdowns down there. And so, you know, if that's one of those things that you're alluding to, I don't know. I don't go in with the approach that, you know, we're never going to be as good as we were last year, even though we're, you know, really good in a phase where every year is a new year, whether that's, you know, as far as our third down defense or how we're running a football, how we punt the football, everything that we feel like are our strengths, you know, need to continue to be strengths. And to what level, you know, I think that all, that'll be something that will hopefully improve as the season goes along.
If Vic and Clowney give you, you know, ideally what you're hoping for, how much more often do you think you can win with a four-man rush, and how much does that open up a different world in terms of what you're able to do?
Well, we'll do each and every week what we feel like gives us the best chance to win, whether it's rush three or, you know, four or five or six. And I think that a lot of that is game plan dependent. So the less people that you rush, the more you have in coverage. You know, I mean, we're going to try to figure out and put guys in the best position to help the team, and based on what we feel like can get them stopped on any situation, and hopefully, you know, we can find ways to put pressure regardless of how many guys that, you know, we send at the quarterback, and try to find ways to affect them each week.
Terrell?
What's up, Coach?
That's right.
In regards to the Broncos safeties, it seems like they really come up and help out and run support. What are some things that stand out when you watch Kareem Jackson and Justin Simmons?
Well, a lot of familiarity with Kareem. Really have always had a lot of respect for him as a football player and as a person. Got to know him very well in Houston, having been there. Fearless, you know, he's willing to throw his body around for his team. He's a very instinctive player, very, very good tackler. Simmons obviously is very athletic, finds the football, and those are, you know, two really good players that I have, you know, I know that this football team and me as the coach have a lot of respect for.
David Beauclair.
Mike, you've referenced numerous times in recent days the fact that you didn't score at Denver last year. Do you use last year's game plan at all as reference, or did you just throw it out and act like you haven't seen this defense in some years?
You know, I think, you know, Vic and their defensive staff are very, very good football coaches, very good defensive coaches. They're sound. Those players are well coached. They execute well, you know, and I, you know, you have to imagine that they're going to, you know, do some of the same things that they did. Sure, they'll have some new things planned for us that they want to try out. But, you know, we struggled to get things going there. And again, that's, I would start there. I'd be able to try to block the stuff that they did last year before we start trying to think about new things that they're going to do.
Chris Harris.
Hey, Mike, how's it going?
Hanging in there, Chris.
All right, good deal. Since you've said you anticipate both Clowney and Vic on the practice field today, I'm curious, what will you need to see out of them on the practice field this week to help you determine how much they'll be able to be used on Monday?
You know, this, you know, conditioning level, how they feel after practice, you know, as we evaluate them and see how they feel after a day of practice, and where they fit into the plan, how much they know, being out on the grass and working with the team. So, it's a beginning of really our week. This is our Wednesday, we get an extra day. So this will be the start of our week, and we'll kind of see where things go as they move further down the week and how they feel and what their conditioning level feels like and how they, pick up what we're asking them to do.
Jim White.
Mike, what are the challenges that go with preparing for a week one game, especially during a year when you didn't even see preseason games? And can you drive yourself crazy worrying about all the unknowns?
I think you have to be, with a new coordinator offensively, what's the carryover that they liked from last year, and what are they going to bring in new? What are they going to try to incorporate from Pat's time at other places. And I think you can probably overthink it a little bit. We're going to have to go out and be sound and come down to fundamentals, executing, tackling, being able to take care of the football, all those things we think are critical each and every week, but even more so now without a whole lot of, prior knowledge of tape on anybody of what they could potentially be doing scheme-wise.
All right, Coach. That's all the questions.
Appreciate Thank you, guys. Time.
There you go. Some of Titans head coach Mike Vrabel, or all of him, talking to the media about their game Monday night in Denver against the Broncos. Don't forget, September is Blood Cancer Awareness Month, and the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society is a global leader in the fight against blood cancer. Because cancer knows nothing of pandemics, we must unite as a community. We will bring light to the darkness of cancer by honoring and remember those touched by cancer and by rallying virtually as a community in support of LLS's mission on Thursday, November 12th. That's, again, Thursday, November 12th. For more information and to register, visit lightthenight.org, lightthenight.org. One thing to pass along before we get back into this discussion, I was looking at the Rams, and remember the running back for the Vols, John Kelly? I don't remember seeing him in Hard Knocks at all, but the actually, it was because he's not with the Chargers. The Browns are signing former UT running back. He was with the Rams. John Kelly is going to be on their practice squad. He was a sixth-round pick by the Rams in 2018. So the Browns have signed John Kelly to their practice squad. So we wanted to pass that along. So last October, it was October 13th, to be exact, and it was really kind of the low point of the season for the Titans. And they had just come off a stinging loss to the Bills at home, and they had lost. So that would have been three of their last four games. Their only win was the win down in Atlanta. They had lost to Indy at home, at Jacksonville. They beat Atlanta, lost to Buffalo at home, and so they get an opportunity to get back on track. They go to Denver, and they get shut out 16-0. So that made them losers of four of their last five. This is the middle of October, and that game, as we know, did not go well. And one thing that Denver did do a really good job of was shutting down Derrick Henry, right? Derrick Henry, 15 carries for 28 yards in that game. And you do wonder, now that we've talked about Von Miller being out of the lineup, can Denver duplicate that? I suspect probably not. I mean, I suspect if the Titans are going to have any success, as we've seen in the past, they need a big game from Derrick Henry. The question is, can he do it against that Denver D?
Well, I think we know that he can. I think the offense has come light years from that day. As you mentioned, that was the low point. They were awful all the way around in that game. I mean, it was the end of Marcus Mariota.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just a nightmare game.
They threw three picks Mariota threw two. Remember, Mariota was replaced in that game, and Tannehill threw a pick. Mm-hmm. So they threw three picks in the game. They were sacked seven times.
It was pitiful.
Yeah, it was pitiful. That's the best way to put it.
Well, I would invite you also to look at Teron Davenport's X's and O's. He does a little breakdown of what the Broncos do, and you could hear it with his question to Mike Vrabel, that Denver is going to be aggressive, and they're going to bring eight into the box, sometimes nine. The safeties in particular are going to be very active. So what's way different now? Marcus Mariota was reasonably good in play action. Ryan Tannehill, as we know, was lights out in play action last year. And once they got the rhythm of that, pretty much nobody could stop them for the most part. So I think that's where the game is going to lie, is that cat and mouse game of we're going to hit you hard with Derrick Henry. He's going to get his touches, but when the read is right, we're going to suck you in, then we're going to hit you with the play action passes. So this is, I think, a great opportunity for a Jonnu Smith, as Teron broke down in the little X and O plays that he drew up, some of the action that you have there. It could be a good Corey Davis game. It could be a great A.J. Brown game. That's the beauty of having Derrick Henry.
A lot of options.
It creates matchups elsewhere because people are cheating up. And Tannehill was able to exploit it, which brings us to probably the question of the year, is how close can they come to duplicating the success of last year? The question was asked about regression to the mean. I think that's the question on everybody's mind. And based on where everybody's predicting the Titans to finish this year, a lot of people don't think they can hit at the same level that they hit when Tannehill took over. They thought it was a nice run, lightning in a bottle, but they won't be able to do the same thing.
Yeah, and I mean, it's obviously a fair question, or a fair statement, I guess is the better way to put it. But, you know, you have to wonder, all right, when you say that Derrick Henry's going to get his touches, do they have a number in mind, or are they going to see how it plays out? I mean, he had 19 carries, 84 yards against Cleveland last year in the first game, and we know how that game went. It got away from Cleveland. Titans had control. So, you know, they were able to do some other things after they had control of that game. But, you know, if are they going to go into this game and go, all right, Von Miller's out, Derrick Henry, the big dog, we're going to put him in the backfield. We're just going to keep feeding him the ball no matter what. We're going to start the year like we ended the year, and he's going to have 25 carries or more in this game. Or are they thinking, all right, they're expecting that, so we have all these weapons that Tannehill can use. Let's spread it around. I mean, we won't know until they kick it off Monday night exactly what they're thinking from that standpoint. But back to your original point, Willie, the regression to the mean and people thinking that the Titans aren't going to be able to replicate what they did last year, I think it's fair because everybody's seen it. Everybody knows what to expect. So if you're Arthur Smith, you have to change the game plan and you have to hit them with something that they're not expecting.
And Mike Vrabel brought up a good example. Why did the Titans not have to kick any field goals last year? Because they were so good at cashing in on touchdowns. The red zone, and that is a classic. If you look at Football Outsiders or Pro Football Focus or any analytics group, they will tell you that red zone efficiency, it's a little bit like the power play in hockey. It's hard to duplicate success every year. It does fluctuate some. Now, there are exceptions, right? We've talked to Tim Hasselbeck many times about how the Patriots, with Tom Brady, every year seem to excel in the red zone, offensively and defensively, for that matter. But I think that'll be the one place that you could tell Mike Vrabel had it on his mind. Can they? I don't know that they can possibly be as good as they were last year. They literally didn't have to attempt a field goal for about five games because they were just cashing everything in for touchdowns. That can make a huge difference in a season.
Well, the year they beat the Chiefs in the playoffs, wasn't that the year Mariota and that offense was so good in the red zone?
I think it was. I think it was the year before. But Mariota did have a great string of not turning the ball over in the red zone. There was one year they were lights out.
I don't know. I don't remember. I just assumed the year they get into the playoffs and they get a big win in Kansas City.
I think it was the year. Didn't he have one touchdown pass more than interceptions that year? when they made the playoffs. That's what everybody was worried about. I think it was the year before where he had the really efficient year. We'll look. But either way, but that's a good example of you can run hot and cold in red zone, the way people scout, the way people get your tendencies. You have to really be creative. Guys like Jonnu Smith, guys like Corey Davis, I mean, can you make a play in the red zone? Can somebody other than Derrick Henry just hammer it in there make the difference? They got creative. Tajae Sharpe made some key catches in the red zone last year, right?
Yeah, I think Willie's right because he had in 2017, that's the year, right, that they went to Kansas City. He had 13 touchdowns, 15 interceptions. The year before, he had 26 touchdowns, 9 interceptions.
Right. That was the year that they had a great red zone year. They went 9-7 but missed the playoffs.
Correct.
The other question I've got is, can they get to Drew Lock? Can they get to Denver? They had a big statue in the, you know, under center last year in Joe Flacco, and they only got to him one time. One time you got to Joe Flacco. And they got to Tannehill and Mariota, who can both, you know, run. They have legs. They can actually move. And Denver got to them 7 times, and they were only able to muster up 1 sack against Joe Flacco. Can they get to the quarterback this game? That's another thing I want to see.
Well, we'll see the new toy and see how they use him. You know, how's he feeling? How many plays can he give him in the first game? I think it's a major question mark. And so what's the game plan? How do you game plan with Clowney? Where do you place him in the game plan? I think it's a... You're going to have to get creative here. I just don't think you just plug him in because Clowney is going to tell you he's ready. And this is really their first day of preparation where they're going to get a chance, you heard Vrabel talk about, to see how he looks. But, you know, he's probably going to be running around, ball of adrenaline today. But those next couple practices, you're really going to get a feel for what kind of shape he's in. And we all question... How great of a shape can you possibly be in when you have not been in any training camp at all? As much as you work out on your own, it's very difficult to duplicate what you have in an NFL training camp. You just can't push yourself that hard.
And we're probably, if I'm being honest, we're not going to know because I would imagine that a lot of that stuff that they're going to do with him, we're, you know, the media is not going to be able to see. They're going to keep that as guarded as they possibly can
until
they play Monday night. But I do believe he's going to play. I think there's no doubt.
Oh, yeah.
But just how much? But how much do you need him? I mean, think about it. If you line up and he's on the field, yes, the Broncos know that he just signed and he hasn't been in training camp. But you still can't ignore it. You can't ignore 99. So it's if he's just a decoy, he's making a difference.
The other thing I wonder about, and I'm you know, here I am, Mr. Amateur Coordinator, but one thing you read about him is he is an extremely disruptive run stopper. Statistically, the stats really back that up. He only had 3 sacks, but remember he had 2 touchdowns, and you know all the numbers say that he's as good a run stopper. So where do you want to use him? If you're using him limited snaps, is it run downs or pass downs?
It's
run downs.
That's probably what I would do.
So where's the foundation? Where do you start? How do you rotate them in there?
Or, you know, I mean, obviously you got to use probably a little bit of both, but I don't know. It's a good question.
Because it's not like he's a pass rush specialist.
No.
No, and I think people have in their mind that that's what he is, but he's not. So, you know, I'll say this. If he does, let's say he plays, 20 snaps, 25 snaps, whatever. But he doesn't register a sack. People don't need to go up in arms over that because, number one, he just got here. And number two, he is more of a run specialist. Now, he's capable of it. You want him to get sacks. That's why you brought him in. You want him to be a part of the pass rush. But don't expect him to just light it up. Now, watch, I say this, and he gets 3 sacks Monday night.
That would be great.
That'd be awesome, but I'd love to be wrong. But I don't expect much out of him Monday against the Broncos.
I think the 20 to 25 snap range sounds good to me. If I knew I could get that and get 20 to 25 good snaps, I'd be really happy for week one with that, thinking long term.
Is that what you think, Darren? 20 to 25?
What's normal for a guy like him? Do we have like...
Well, I think he's an every down guy.
Well, I know, but what's a normal game for him?
I would say... I'd like to know... How often is your defense on the field partially? Hopefully, you know, you're among the better teams in time of possession with a guy like Henry, but 50? 40 to 50?
So you're basically saying half?
Oh, yeah, I think.
Yeah, all right, so here you go. Last year, Jadeveon Clowney... Week one against Seattle, he had 46 snaps, 38, 35, 42, 54, 47, 37, 58, 63, 69, 43, 40, 33. That was his snap count last year.
Why was he in two games in the 60s?
Well, it depends on how often your defense is on the field.
Who are they going against?
Tampa. And okay, so San Francisco.
High-scoring affairs.
At San Francisco. Well, that was a 27-24 win. That was that, I think that, was that Monday night game? I believe it was. That Monday night thriller where Wilson let them back and they won at the very end.
Yeah, against the 49ers, that was supposedly, that's the game, the showcase game that everybody talks about with Clowney as to what he looks like at his best. When they beat the 49ers on Monday night. How many snaps did he have in that game, Chase?
69.
69.
And he had a sack. He had a touchdown as well in that game.
I would say I'd like to see more toward the 30, push 30 for this game. I'd like to see him about around 30 against Denver.
When was he acquired last year by Seattle? I don't remember exactly when it was, but I know it was in camp, was it not?
It was well into camp though. Mm-hmm. Let's take a look.
He had 46 snaps in his first game. So now again, it wasn't the week before the first game, but.
And was he in training camp with the Texans before that, or was he holding out?
I don't remember. If I'm being just completely honest with you, I don't remember. But.
That's a good question. Did he have no training camp last year?
Sure, but if you get, I say 20 to 25. But Darren, you make a
August
good
31st last year. Sorry.
Okay, so it was
late in camp.
Yeah. When?
August 31st. Okay. So around Labor Day weekend.
The season started a little bit earlier last year than this year.
So late in camp.
Titans played on September 8th. And so he that had Thursday been, night game would have been on, September 5th? So
and Clowney
had earlier start.
And Clowney had skipped the team's off-season conditioning program and missed the deadline for the extension.
Yeah, and their week one was September 8th as well. So that was their first game. A 21-20 win over the Bengals.
So. Yeah, he's got a history of this stuff, so...
It's a lot of when he's ready, when he's right, when he feels good.
So he might play more than we think. If just based on
what did he play in that first game against the Bengals?
46. Had 46 snaps.
46.
He had a sack in that game.
But he's also, you know, it's not like he had to learn anything. So he, you know, it's not so.
What do you mean?
Well, I guess he did.
He
played 46 snaps, and he had just been there a little over a week.
Yeah. And I would say that this defense, I don't know, but he's obviously more familiar with this defense than he would have been Seattle because of Vrabel.
True.
So
I think maybe our numbers may be a little bit low.
Yeah. So –
maybe it wouldn't hurt to push him 35-40 range.
For that,
I still would hesitate. But you have to evaluate where he is, what you think, what you're seeing.
It's more physical than
in this week.
Knowing the playbook.
I mean, you get a chance to see what he looks like on the practice field these next few days. And that's got to weigh in on how much you use him.
Right, and that's what you guys pointed out yesterday. It's more – It's more, okay, how is he physically as opposed to the scheme? I mean, I think he's smart enough and has been in the league long enough that Vrabel can say, all right, you're going to go stand over there and he'll be fine. Like he doesn't necessarily have to know every little aspect of the playbook. It's just, can he handle it? Can he handle 46 snaps? Is he physically ready to do that? So, and they're going to know that. We won't.
They will. All right, we'll come back. We'll get a little Ravens preview with Gary Stein, find out what they're all about. How are they handling expectations? How are they handling disappointment of last year when there were huge expectations going into January and the Titans went in there and took care of business? We'll talk to Gary on the other side. Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. You know you've been around the block a time or two whenever you've been talking to our next guest for two decades. Two decades. Willie, a lot's happened in two decades since we've been talking to Gary Stein in Baltimore. 105.7 The Fan in Baltimore. That's how long he's been covering the Ravens. He does a lot of things in that area, including Maryland, Terrapins, football. Still doing soccer, Gary? You were doing soccer, I think, the last time we talked. You still doing soccer?
Well, if there's a season, I will be doing soccer. That is correct.
Yeah.
But without fans, I don't know. You know, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if soccer's going to work.
Well, I think NFL is going to work. They're going to have a season. That's pretty clear. Let's start with kind of what started kind of the Ravens news in camp. They parted ways with Earl Thomas. What was going on? What was the story behind the scenes with him? You've heard a lot of stuff, that's for sure.
Yeah. I think that I really think it's not as complicated as people want to make it out to be. You know, sometimes you can get a great player, but he's not a great fit for your team for a variety of reasons. Maybe it's your culture, maybe it's him, maybe it's a combination of the two. And I think even from day one, when Earl Thomas came to the Ravens, they signed him, it wasn't a great fit. I just don't think that he really got what the Ravens were all about. He freelanced a lot. There are two issues here. There's what he did on the field and what he did off the field. What he did on the field was he freelanced a lot. That in and of itself isn't a crime, because Ed Reed freelanced a lot, but Ed Reed got there. Ed Reed made the play. More often than not, Earl Thomas wouldn't make the play. And so when you freelance and you don't make the play, that exposes the other people on your defense. That was issue number one. Issue number two, I mean, look, you've probably read in, you know, a variety of publications about his off-the-field stuff that he did, which, you know, kind of landed him in a little bit of hot water, to say the least. And that didn't sit well with the Ravens. And so I think that, you know, all of that stuff just kind of bubbled up to the surface. He got into it with Chuck Clark. Clark kind of berated him. Earl Thomas doesn't take that. They got into a scuffle, and Chuck Clark won, bottom line. Ravens didn't have a use for him, suspended him, released him. They'll take a salary cap hit a little bit. But bottom line is it's probably addition by subtraction.
Hmm. How is Lamar Jackson handling, you know, just all the expectations? And last year, obviously, huge year, weren't able to finish things off. It didn't go well against the Titans. We all know all about that, by the way. Big regular season and then losing that first home game in the playoffs.
Yeah.
It just happened to be the tables were turned, and the Titans were able to do that to Baltimore. But how is he handling, you know, the pressure of trying to follow up an MVP season, the pressure of trying to now win games in January? I mean, how does he – what's the makeup of him to handle that?
I don't even think he thinks about it, Darren, to be honest
really?
With you. Hmm. I know that that's going to kind of sound weird, especially because – I mean, just think about it. Like, this is what you and I do, right? We talk about this all the time, you know, ad nauseum, on the radio, on the TV, online, now, right? It's like we talk about it. Like, we make these things up. Yeah, I'm not saying we're lying. I'm saying we're creating these storylines, right? We do it all the time. That's our job, right?
he doesn't even, dude, I got to tell you something. He doesn't even think about it. He doesn't even, I'm not going to say he doesn't remember the Titans game. Of course he remembers it. He doesn't think about it more than just that. You know, it's over. It's history. Move on. Next play, next game, next game plan. And you probably don't know his mother. His mother is the shining light of his life. His mother's his agent, basically. You know, they're close. They're tight. He's a family guy. None of that glitter and all that other stuff that we associate with the league, it doesn't apply to him. So to answer your question, long way around it, I think he's handling it great. You know, the only pressure that Lamar's putting, that Lamar has is what he puts on himself. Not the fans, not the team, not the media, not the glare, none of that. He's Lamar. Hmm. He's awesome. I know you haven't been around him. He is awesome. Great guy.
Interesting. Gary Stein on the line with us, 105.7, the Fan in Baltimore. So I wondered this about Kittle when he kind of burst on the scene and had that big year. You know, of course, we all do the fantasy football around here, so you always wonder, can he follow that up? And I was hesitant last year. You know, I don't know if this guy's the real deal or not. Did he used to have a big season? We know George Kittle is the real deal. I wondered the same thing about Mark Andrews. I took him this year in fantasy. Is he the real deal? I mean, give me the makeup of Mark Andrews at tight end.
You know,
is he a stud tight end?
Yeah, I mean, look, is he a Kelce or a Kittle right now? No, but you know, Kittle wasn't a Kittle until really a couple years ago either. Yeah, well, no, even last year, because he had the one good year, and then you probably asked the same question about Kittle, right?
Yeah.
So you're asking now the same question about Andrews. So you didn't know about really Kittle until last year. I mean, I think you'll find out about Andrews. You know, Andrews is a good young man. He's a serious guy. You know, he's a diabetic. He takes his, you know, that leaves a mark on a person, no pun intended, obviously. You know, he takes everything seriously. He's a good guy. He's a good study. I think he's going to get even more opportunity in the offense this year because they didn't bring back Hayden Hurst. They traded him for a couple of draft choices to Atlanta. Him and Boyle are the two tight ends. Boyle is more of a blocking tight end than Andrews. So yeah, I think Andrews' numbers, I wouldn't be surprised with the 1,000-yard season. You know, I'm not going to take, if you're playing fantasy, I'm not taking him ahead of Kelce and Kittle, but I put him on par with Zach Ertz right now. And so yeah, you're asking me, is he the real deal? I kind of think he is.
We're talking to Gary Stein, who has covered the Ravens for a long time. But Gary, I want to ask you one about, it's related to what John Harbaugh said in the Free the Big Ten speech that he gave. I always have to remind myself still today that Maryland is in the Big Ten and not in the ACC. It's because for so many years I was programmed that way. But give me the thought in your circles on where the Big Ten football is going. It seems like there's a lot of momentum to try to figure out a way to play, to satisfy the people you need to satisfy to get on the field. Where do you think it's going?
I think they're going to find a way to play. Unless, with a caveat, which is the caveat for everything in the world today,
right?
Unless another Armageddon hits us, okay? Which we don't know, which nobody thinks is going to happen, but who knows? You know, whatever, politics. I don't even want to get into that. It makes my head crazy, and I want to blow myself up. So, all things being equal, whatever, I think they're going to try to find a way to play. You know, there are certain sections in the country where football is just too damn important. The SEC clearly being one of them. I think Big Ten football and SEC football is even more important for the country than the NFL, for crying out loud. Because, I mean, these towns that these SEC teams are in and these Big Ten teams are in, they don't have anything else. You know, I mean, what else is going on in Tuscaloosa? What else is going on in Baton Rouge? What else goes on in Ann Arbor, for crying out loud? The football team and the university is the town. Right? Without that, the town isn't the town. So I think fans, regardless, they're going to try to play because it's so important. And look, what form the schedule is going to take, I have no idea. How many games they're going to be able to play, who knows. But I think they're going to try to figure out a way to play.
Another question we kick around a lot. It has been determined that the first two Titans games will not have fans. They're hopeful, based on a conference call they had or a Zoom call they had with the media yesterday, they are hopeful that after the first two games, they'll be able to talk about it. They're ready if they get the go-ahead from the mayor. What's the landscape for the Ravens in terms of fans of the stands?
Yeah, it's a good question. Initially, this was like months ago, three months ago, whatever. They came out and said, we're going to have 14,000 fans, so basically 20% of the stadium, you know, about 20, 25%. Then they lowered that down to 7,500, about 10% of the stadium. Now it's zero. I guess they had a meeting with the governor, the state, you know, whatever, goes through the protocols, the plans, et cetera. So now it's zero. But they are hoping that that's going to be lifted, and by mid-season perhaps, so what would that be? Middle October, November, I guess. They're hoping to have some fans in the stands. I think right now it's 7,500, so probably the lowest capacity that they could have. But right now it's zero fans. No fans will be in the stands come Sunday.
Talking to Gary Stein, Baltimore Ravens, getting a preview on them. Now, we obviously know that Lamar Jackson, Mark Ingram were the run game for the most part last year for this team, but rookie J.K. Dobbins, a draft pick out of Ohio State, how do you see him fitting in with this team?
Completely fitting in with the team. I can see, first of all, I was a little surprised by the selection, but the more I thought about it, the more I talked to people, the thinking behind the selection is just so sound. He dropped. He's a round one talent. How many more years does Mark Ingram have left? Gus Edwards isn't a game breaker. He's not a good pass catcher. Lamar Jackson is young. They have plenty of years, J.K. Dobbins and Lamar Jackson together. If I'm a fantasy player, I take J.K. Dobbins a little later. I don't know what round, probably not fourth or fifth even, maybe eighth, ninth, tenth, 11th, if he's still there, obviously. But I think by mid-season, you're going to see the balance of power in the Ravens' backfield shift, and it's going to shift towards J.K. Dobbins. Because J.K. Dobbins is a home run hitter. He's the biggest home run hitter the Ravens have in both catching the football out of the backfield, and that's going to be a big part of this game plan. One of the reasons why they let Hayden Hurst go for two draft choices was because they feel they could get more pass-catching ability out of the backfield, and they're going to do that, and J.K. Dobbins is going to be a big part of that.
When do you think Ronnie Stanley gets his contract? We've seen all these first-round picks from that draft get their next contract, and you got to figure he's next in line. So when do you think that comes?
I think it comes after the season. I think that he is going to get it. The Ravens will not let him go to another team with that second contract. There are certain players the Ravens keep and certain ones they don't. I mean, they didn't even keep C.J. Mosley for that second go-around. He was a good player, great player. But Ronnie Stanley's special. Ronnie Stanley's got Hall of Fame potential if he stays healthy. Didn't allow a sack last year. Both tackle slots. I mean, Orlando Brown on the right side is obviously a step behind Ronnie Stanley because of tenure, experience, etc. But the Ravens are set at tackle, barring injury and health, for the next decade. They're not going to let Ronnie Stanley go.
Who's the number one target for Lamar Jackson this year?
Marquise Brown. I think they want to be the number one target. They want that to be the guy. But he's slight. I wouldn't say he's injury prone. We don't know that yet. But he does. He's been hurt. And until you're not hurt, you got a label, as you well know. But they want him to be the number one target. But if you're talking about sheer volume, I think Mark Andrews will get the most targets.
By the way, just on the way out, J.K. Dobbins went in the middle of the sixth round in our draft this past weekend that all three of us are in. 12-team league, so just so you know.
I mean, I think that's a little high, but I'm actually a fairly – I don't want to toot my own horn. I'm a fairly good fantasy player, fairly. But I think that obviously the person who picked him in the sixth round believes that the balance of power is going to shift. It's just a matter of when.
Yeah, it was not one of the three of us, so we can bash that owner for picking too
high. I think it's a little high.
Gary, always appreciate it. You continue to be safe in Baltimore, and we will talk to you down the road, my man.
Guys, you do the same. Hopefully we can hook up again before the Titans and the Ravens do it.
Sounds good. Gary Stein in Baltimore does a great job covering that team, has known that team inside and out for a very, very long time. 105.7 The Fan there in Baltimore. Good stuff on the Ravens and handling expectations. That was pretty interesting about Lamar Jackson. I was not I've always been curious, kind of like his makeup, you know, how, you know, his star is obviously huge right now. He is a huge name in the sport at a very, very, you know, this early in his career. How do, you know, I always wonder, how do people handle that? And it's pretty glowing from Gary about how he's handled things to this point.
Did you know that his mom sort of acts as his agent?
No, I did not. No, I did not know that.
That's a really fun, that's a fun story. I think he is special, no question. I think they're doing a lot of the same things in their own way as the Titans are. Their offense for really the entire season, as opposed to the Titans for the last 10, 12 weeks, was cooking. Like nobody could figure it out. So they're trying to say to themselves, okay, what will defenses do against us differently? They've been studying us, and how do we wrinkle and show them a little something so we stay at the same efficiency rate? Their critics will be asking the same questions. Can they duplicate what was an almost unstoppable offense last year? And even though the Titans beat them, they made all the key plays at the key times. It's not like they couldn't keep them from moving the ball. Like nobody really stopped them from moving the ball. So what's the next step for the Ravens? Will they regress, or can they do this again for a whole season?
Mm-hmm.
Dobbins could be a big part of that equation, right? How do they use him?
Could be. It will be interesting to see
of
how
course,
they
Chase
follow
and I,
up.
Chase and I have Ingram, so I can see why Chase was asking the question about Dobbins, because we took Ingram pretty early.
You took Ingram in the late fourth round, second to last pick.
Yes.
In the fourth round. And J.K. Dobbins, as I said, went middle of the sixth round.
And Chase and I are co-owners of the team in our league. My thinking was, he's a sure thing. That Ingram is a guy that is, you know what you're getting. And hopefully his role won't change a whole lot. Even if they use Dobbins, it won't take too much away from Ingram. That's my thought, but we'll see.
Just for reference point out there, you guys, the very next pick to end the fourth round was Le'Veon Bell. So I don't know how the listeners feel, but you guys took Mark Ingram over Le'Veon Bell. So we'll see how that all plays out.
We were contemplating Le'Veon Bell, and if Le'Veon Bell was still sitting there coming back around in the next round, that's who we would have taken. But he was okay. The next pick. Yep.
Okay. I, two picks before that, had taken Leonard Fournette.
There's another one. A lot of questions.
And the pick before mine was Melvin Gordon, which we will see in the Titans game on Monday. But when we got the report yesterday in Denver, it seemed like Grisal painted the picture that Lindsay and Gordon will kind of split the load this year,
well,
at least early on.
And that's another guy that we have. I'm throwing this out, not that anybody cares about our particular fantasy
well, but
teams,
people
but every,
are playing
people,
fantasy.
People
they
are drafting their teams. They're having these same questions that
sure.
They're kicking around. And so we took Lindsay a little later, hoping that, you know, he will end up getting his regular workload. I think he is good enough to be a really productive back, but how much will of his opportunity will be taken away from Gordon or by Gordon?
The trickiest part, see, the Denver thing doesn't really confuse me as much because both guys have a body of work. Like Melvin Gordon has a body of work in the league. What's always tricky is kind of like what we're talking about. The Dobbins, who's a rookie. Like you don't know, right? All you can do is project. It's like Marlon Mack and Jonathan Taylor, right? Like all these people taking Taylor over Mack. Well, Mack is, you know what he brings to the table. You're just projecting and hoping that Taylor brings it to the table, right? If you took Taylor over Mack, or if you took Dobbins over Ingram. But there's no way to know with rookies. No way to know. You're just guessing. You're hoping that all the projections and what people are saying, it's true. But it has to actually play out, because the other guy, you know what Mark Ingram brings to the table, right? You know what Mack brings to the table. It's what are the rookies, what are the young guys bring to the table? That's always tricky. I tend to stay away from that just because I just don't trust it, because so many times it doesn't play out. Go back and look at all the fantasy drafts. and all the young guys that were taken really high, and it never worked out. It ended up being just a bust pick. Sometimes they do, though. Sometimes they're massive hits. We'll come back. Tim Hasselbeck, our weekly chat with him to start the third hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase. That's next.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.